Hello, beautiful souls.
We bring you conscious content filled with empowering information.
Designed to align you with the fulfilling freedom of activated awareness.
I am Rachel Alcyon.
And I am Daniel Alcyon.
Welcome to the Ecstatic Existence Podcast.
Hello again, everybody.
Yay. Welcome back.
Global extended family, you've decided to join our family on a huge adventure. This is, of course, the Ecstatic Existence Podcast, but we're doing it a little different. This is our travel log, travel diary, documenting our amazing experiences as we move around the UK. In the last episode, you may remember that we're currently in our RV that we picked up in England, and we drove all the way down through southern England and headed into Wales. When we left off, we had just crossed into Wales.
Yeah, and so we found a really great campsite, and, you know, we got in there right in the nick of time. I think they closed at 8 o'clock, and we got in right on the dot.
And she stretched it to even be 8.
Right, right. And it's just, Wales is a really sweet place.
And so our first plan in Wales, our first destination, was to meet with Jamie Lee Redwood and Lisa Lee, who are some of the strongest, most incredible people I've ever met. Jamie is actually a multiple-time record holder as Wales' strongest man.
Yeah, and his beloved Jamie, who is a total badass, she is a four-time champion, heavyweight champion.
Powerlifter.
So that's pretty cool. And so we got to do this epic workout with them. They took the kids and Daniel and I through this, like, circuit. We met at a park in Wales in
The Rhondda Valley.
And, yeah, they had it all set up. He had, like, this really, like, high-intensity music playing. He was, like, all in our face videotaping. We're, like, doing burpees and push-ups and running. We'd be like, run. And then we'd have, you know, he had this other, like, kind of tripod set up where there were these different colored buttons that we had to press. And so he'd be like green, and we'd like have to lunge forward and hit the green, and then, you know, blue, and have to lunge to the right or lunge to the left. It was so funny.
And meanwhile, just be running in place the whole time, getting your heart rate up.
Yeah, it's like flash dance, like, she's a maniac, just like jogging in place. And
it was a nice sunny hot day, which was great, breaking a sweat out there. And then we had to pick up these big, like a big keg, and like run and sprint with this big beer keg, and then like flip this big heavy bag up over our shoulders and like a fireman's carry. And
yeah, Liberty did really great with that. She was able to lift this big, huge, like foam, like heavy, heavy, dense foam up over her head and then run. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was pretty great. So then we did a little trade-off there, and I showed this lovely couple some acro yoga basics. Rachel and I walked them through a whole demo.
Yeah, and some stretching basics. And it just felt really good to, like, after being on a plane and driving so much, to move our bodies in that way and really get some sweat flowing and blood moving. And yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. And so one of the other reasons, other than this amazing training session and the opportunity to meet Wales' strongest man, which he so humbly says, not the current, but in my opinion, Jamie Lee Redwood, you will always be Wales' strongest man. So the main reason we wanted to meet with him is because he has a really inspiring story. Jamie and
Lisa
are both vegan. And as far as Jamie knows, he's the only person he even knew that went vegetarian in the Rhondda Valley, Wales, and then went full vegan, and uses his own training and his life as an inspiration to others and to help teach and train them. They also do a lot of animal rights and activism. As a matter of fact, as Lisa was winning her powerlifting titles, she was doing it for the plight of the animals.
She was dedicating each lift to animal rights, animal activism.
Yeah, and so she won her four titles as a powerlifter on a vegan diet, as a vegan. So
yeah, so it was super cool to interview both of them. You'll have to be sure and go check out that episode and learn more about their stories and why they chose to do this and how it's massively impacted their lives and the lives of their community, right? Like the Rhondda Valley is kind of it's a smaller community. And so they're really trailblazers for not only their community and their country, but for really blasting through this mistaken belief that you have to eat flesh and blood to be strong.
Right, or that, like, you can't be an athlete and be a vegan or something. They're really flipping that mistaken belief on its head. So I'm going to give you a little sample of Jamie and Lisa now. You can check out their amazing Welsh accents and get a little taste of who they are as people. And then make sure to check out the full interview where they share their story. It's about maybe 15-minute mini show. So that's going to be really cool. Listen to that on the side and check out these amazing, strong people.
Now I'm building my physical strength up, but I'm the fittest I've ever been. I basically run all the mountains around here, train for hours a day. I feel better, fitter, more vibrant, happier mentally, physically. My strength is now building up. It's a process, but now only am I not strong. Whereas before I was just strong physically, 25 stone 5 in a physical sense, now I'm strong mentally, because true strength comes from within.
Yeah.
And how can you be strong when you're eating the suffering and pain of animals on your plate? That's not strength, and that's
Lisa,
my opinion.
Did you go vegan with him right away too?
Yes, I did. And then in 2013, I competed in 4 competitions, powerlifting competitions, and in honor and to speak up for the animals, to show people that you can be strong without eating animals. So it was for the animals' rights. That I won 4 competitions and was 4 times vegan. Powerlifting champ.
Yes. Wow!
After being vegan. Yeah.
Cool.
Against all the meat eaters or animal eaters.
Yeah. So. I think the meat slows you down, really.
Yes, it definitely does.
And now in our line of work as well that we're doing is to speak out for the animals and spread the word as much as we can and be their voice because they don't have one themselves, yes. You know?
Well, that was a really inspiring story, I think, and I love their accents, and the accents really even got thicker the farther we went along our trip. We ended up at a campsite, which the campsites through the UK are really hilarious. It's not like camping in the US at all, where, you know, you go and you want some privacy and, you know, maybe there's lots of trees and you get to have your own fire pit, or maybe you're brave enough to put on a backpack and just hike out into a forest.
And set up a tent somewhere.
Right. This is not like that at all. This is like a huge open grass field where there's bathrooms and everybody pulls their RV up or their camper.
Their caravan.
And they're all like right next door to each other and everybody just hangs out in their caravan. I didn't really see people out and about too much. Sometimes there were like these little kid parks and then you'd see people playing on the jungle gym or whatever.
No, sometimes people would just sit in their lawn chairs right outside their caravan.
And watch TV.
They brought their TV antennas and little, like, pop-up fences.
So it's like a whole different vibe and not really our cup of tea, but, you know, sometimes that's all we had, right?
And it's the way that we got facilities and a way to dump our waste and refill our water tank and all of that.
Yeah, and take advantage of doing some laundry. So that's why we utilized it. Right as we were about to leave to go check out some really sweet, quaint Welsh towns on the beach, we were stopped by one of the guys that worked at the facility, and he was like, hey, there's some guys here from the BBC News, and they're interviewing people that are campers, people that camp, that come to these kind of locations, and he specifically wants people that are outside of the UK, that aren't Welsh or aren't, you know, English or whatever. And I was like, well, that's us. We're here. We're camping.
And so she came running back up to me. She's like, Daniel, we're getting interviewed by the BBC.
They want to come into our camper. We're getting interviewed. And I'm like, kids, make your bed. Everybody clean up. Meanwhile, I've been like fermenting things like crazy because that feels really supportive to our health and our diet needs. And so, but the fermented onions kept spilling over. They were so
alive
and active that they would like pop their top off. It was like this pressure cooker in there. And
they're pretty pungent.
They're quite pungent, fermented onions. Very delicious, perfect on salads and sandwiches and things. But yeah, there's a particular aroma. And so then I was like feeling all self-conscious and I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, they can totally interview us. And our space smells like fermented onions. So that was like a whole laughing point. Anyway, so we quickly tidied, had them over, really had a great interview. So
the host was Gareth Gwynne.
Yeah, so when that comes out, we'll try to find a copy of it and share it with you, because that was, like, it's such a cool thing. Like, how many people can say they got interviewed by the BBC?
Yeah, I'll do my best to get a copy of that audio and then rebroadcast here, or at least share where you can find a link to that show. So they were part of a show that was called, like, Under the Tent, I think it's called, and they did a radio program all about camping in the UK.
Right. And in particular Wales, because like Wales is doing a whole campaign of like wanting more people to come through and experience their lovely country.
Find your epic.
Yeah. And he's like, so what do you know about Wales? He's like, it's okay if you don't know anything. And we're like, honestly, we don't really know much about Wales, you know? I feel like England holds such a big presence and has so many iconic spaces.
And then Ireland on the other side has quite the mystique as well.
Right. And Scotland has its own Braveheart charm. So... but yeah, you don't really hear about Wales, and we're like, we know about Tom Jones. He's Welsh. So, I mean, we even in our effort to educate ourselves and our family about Welsh culture and history, we still didn't really feel like we were able to fill in those pieces very well.
Yeah, we couldn't really find...
Come around and then say what you're going to say.
Yeah, we couldn't really find any information about Wales.
Yeah. So, it was kind of interesting for them to, you know, ask us and have us be like, I don't know, we're discovering it as we go.
Yeah, and also, they were quite fascinated by the fact that we weren't just going there to stay there for a few days.
Because that's another thing that everybody does camping. They just kind of, like, choose a site to go, they go there, and then they just, like, live in this field with everybody else in their all caravans, and they think then they go home.
Right. I mean, I'm like, that sounds like a lot of work and not really that cool. The way that they're doing it. So they were like, oh, okay, so you got a van and you're traveling around.
And you're here just for one night. Everybody, anytime we said one night, they're like, oh, just one night, huh?
Yeah. So that was fun. And a great thing to be able to say, like, we got interviewed by the BBC in Wales.
I did find some company, though, under the roof of a luxury camper van rather than the rustic canvas I'd hoped for. This is really nice.
Yeah. And this is Liberty and Merritt.
Rachel is a life coach from the American West Coast. And from the smell of the caravan, I realised she was into fermentation too. I was pleased she explained that to me, as years of coach travel between cities has taught me, if you get on a vehicle and smell something unusual, position yourself as far from the toilet as possible.
Back home near Seattle, we actually live on our boat. So we live on our yacht. And so we're already used to kind of this idea of having our whole life being rather small, like it's tiny home living, but then also mobile. So we have our whole home with us and we don't even need to pack when we want to go traveling. So we have a holiday and we just untie, we head out to an island, hang out for a while and come back. So I think it crossed over really well. And
then if you're staying at hotels and stuff, then you have to eat out all the time. And, you know, I like my ferments, so I can't be eating out every night.
And you can take them with you.
I'm sort of a homebody, and I have all these like healing practices that I do, self-care practices, and I just need to be able to do them when I want to do them. And so that was sort of the draw of living on our yacht as well, is that like I can be a homebody, and like a snail, I can go travel the whole world.
Because you've got to like pare your stuff down a bit, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Is that like a lifestyle decision where you went, I'm not going to have tons of stuff?
Yeah, I would say we identify as minimalists.
Yeah.
Very active lifestyle decision. And even when we travel here, you know, we pass through the airport and all these families have giant suitcases.
Oh, it's maddening.
We each have one backpack.
Makes me want to kick their bags.
We come for 3 weeks with one backpack each. Last year we did Central Europe with one backpack each. And so, yeah, we've kind of like settled into this little home space a bit, but it's a very intentional thing of only bringing one backpack.
It's not camping, but Rachel and Daniel's dedication to this minimalist lifestyle, especially back in their Seattle home, was more, I don't know, genuine than my toying with camping for a few nights. They were here on this summer-long UK adventure with a single backpack each. I had a single backpack too, augmented by anything else I could throw in the back of my Ford Focus. But I had one burning question. Actually, I had so many questions about their lifestyle, but let's stick to the brief of the show. My one burning question. So, what did you know about Wales that brought you to the country?
What's funny is not very much. As we were even doing our research, part of our process was unveiling this to the girls as part of a Christmas gift.
Yeah, so we had a huge box that we filled with helium balloons, wrapped it in Christmas wrapping paper. So Christmas morning, they got to tear into this giant box. Because we don't do things, right? Because we're minimalists, so we do experiences.
And we wrote poems about each of the locations, and then we really had some interesting
Yeah, we're like, oh, the flag is a dragon. That's cool. And, you know,
The daffodil?
Yeah, daffodils and leeks. I love leeks and daffodils. But so then we started listening to music because we have all this research that the kids have to do, like movies and books and, you know, they have to learn their history about
places. Yeah, so we wanted to find musicians that came from Wales.
And we found, what, Tom Jones?
It's not unusual. There's loads of musicians who come from Wales.
Oh, well, gosh, we got to figure that out.
But there wasn't any, like, because there's a Visit Wales tourist board, you know, who try and advertise Wales to the world. So currently the campaign is your epic adventure or something like that. Find your epic. None of this.
You didn't
clock any of this?
No.
So they were a draw.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I'm at a computer sending Daniel and Rachel some of the videos and also reading the Visit Wales website. It begins when we step outside our normal lives and do something amazing.
Yeah, then we headed out to Tenby.
Which was, I think, that's my favorite city that we visited in Wales.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It was immensely beautiful.
It was immensely beautiful.
So Tenby is this lovely beach city, beach town. And even as we were approaching, we were like, yeah, okay, well, whatever. But then by the time we found a place to park and then even walk just a few blocks, it's like it just unfolded and so charming and so quaint. All the little shops.
Yeah, and all the buildings are really cute pastel colors, like pale pink and blue, these creamy whites and soft yellows. It's all the pastel colors. It looks like Easter eggs.
And then when you find your way down to the beach, you know, there's all these like, you know, cliffside shops and everything, and then there are different pathways and staircases that lead all down to an amazing white sand beach. It's huge.
It's gorgeous. So lots of cool cliffs and caves.
And there were a bunch of jellyfish on the beach.
Big ones washed up. And the staircases down are like ancient. We even found a staircase that it looked like they had carved into the rock steps. I mean, it could have been from like the 1500s or something.
Yeah, you couldn't even see it at first. And then you realize, oh no, those are cut steps into the rocks.
Yeah, super cool. And then there's like a rock island just off of the beach of Tenby, which is where St. Catherine's Castle sits.
Yep. So there's St. Catherine's Castle on St. Catherine's Island, which is out in this big white sand beach. And oh man, it's a really magic place. It's so cool. There's like a cave. I almost don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like this island is made up of a couple different little islands, and there's like a tunnel or a passageway through the stone. Picture like a large stone hallway.
Right, like a land bridge kind of thing.
Yeah, and so it's almost like you go through this canyon
doorway
that's maybe only like 6 feet wide. Like you could reach out and touch it with both hands, but it's really tall. And then you go through it and there's like a little secret beach on the other side, a little cove.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And yeah, you got to fly the drone.
I got some really cool drone shots.
Oh, I saw a mermaid on a rock. Yes, definitely.
We did see a mermaid for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really fun. Beautiful place. We explored a bunch and there was this really neat, like a, what would you call it? A pavilion? A pagoda?
What is that called? A little building. Yeah, it's like a gazebo.
A gazebo. There's like this gazebo on that clifftop that as you were walking up to it, like no big deal. But then when you walked into the entry center of this gazebo.
Perfectly centered.
Yep. It was like a microphone, like an amplifier with like some resonant feedback.
Kind of like a cave to echo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there would be a bit of an echo on your voice. It made your voice sound really cool. I sounded like a mermaid singing, so everybody's all like, ah, you know, making all these cool sounds.
And meanwhile,
and
the mermaid.
To you, it sounds like freaking amazing. And then as soon as you step out of that center point, it just sounds like a regular person doing weird things with their voice. But in it, it's a magical experience.
Yeah, and meanwhile, there was a mermaid out on the rocks that you were singing to.
Yeah, I was calling to her.
Yeah.
We were calling to each other.
That was amazing. Oh, and then
yeah, their marinas are unlike anything we'd ever seen before.
No, it's so different. So, you know, we live on our boat. We've been on boats for 4 years now. And so we're pretty familiar with at least the way that things are done in the Puget Sound, Salish Sea area around the state of Washington, in the northwest of the USA. But they do something very bizarre. Their marinas often have a huge tidal flow, a huge tidal influx. And so the water will really fill in and then really empty out.
So it's like there's no water in it and they're just beach and there's no water. So how would they get out of the marina?
Yeah, the boats literally just sit on the land, sit on the sand.
So even the sailboats that have these keels, they're like double or even triple pronged keels. So that
they don't tip over to the side. It just kind of sets itself down in the sand.
Right, like a claw. So yeah. The bottom of the boat looks like this two or three pronged claw that just ends up being these stilts that the whole rest of the boat sits on.
The only ones that I saw were on two, and it was pretty weird because they were still tilting a little. So,
but not all the way over.
Yeah, yeah. And there'd be like these sandbars where we're like, how the heck do they even get out to their boat at low tide?
And then we saw
you'd
this.
You'd like trudge through the mud.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they just have to plan it. We talked to some people. We ended up talking to somebody and say, like, we don't understand this. How do you do this? And they said, oh, well, a lot of timing. Like, so much planning and so much timing. Like, you could, you know, there's a high tide and a low tide 2 times a day. And so you could come in at high tide, take your boat out, sail around a little bit, and you just come back in on the next high tide.
So you have about 8 to 12 hours to go around and sail and then come back. Or you just go out and stay the night and come back in when the tide's high again.
Yep.
So they learn their tide tables really well.
And then we saw this one dude on a sailboat, and he was, like, pushing his boat out to the water.
Yeah, out in the mud.
Oh, yeah. That was funny. And the roads are so narrow. I mean, obviously, we blew our mirror out on the way getting into Wales in the last episode, so go back and check that out. But they're so narrow that the people's door steps are, like, right.
It's like there isn't a sidewalk. It's like they step out of their little doors into the road.
They step out of the door, off the curb, and you're in the road. And so we would be walking down this road, and there would be nowhere for us to go other than to, like, almost like we were on Mission Impossible or some James Bond kind of thing. And so we would tuck into these doorways or any little teeny alley or nook just to be able to get out of the street, so.
And mind you, this is to, like, dodge a Mini Cooper. Like, a little Mini is coming down the street, and you got to dodge that.
Right.
Man, it was pretty great. Beautiful city. So, Tenby, Wales. Check it out.
Yeah, a beautiful hill with a monument. I mean, there were lovers and the mist was coming in and then it began to rain and we had to run home. And it was just everything about Tenby was so magical.
Oh, man. We found this bathroom. We found a restroom, right? Public restroom. And there was a lot of the restrooms in Europe. The public restrooms are pay. You have a toll, right?
Yeah, you have to put
coins in. So this was unattended. Some are attended and some are not. And this one is unattended. And so there's just a bar that crosses at about waist height, like a turnstile. And you're supposed to put in maybe 20 pence or something, like 20p.
Maybe 30.
Something like that to go through. And there was this mom that had this whole clan of kids with her. And then two of the boys were going in towards the men's restroom. And they come up to this, these kids are small, and this bar is just at waist height. And the one smaller boy says, well, we can just go under. We can just go under. And the older boy goes, we can't do that. That's naughty. That would be naughty. It was so good. So cute.
Yeah. Then all the little kids were like doing it to the girls' bathroom and the boys' bathroom. They just kept going under all of them.
So cute. Yeah, so we had a great stay at that camping park and got up and at 'em the next morning. And
we were heading on our way towards Saint something's.
Saint David's.
So, yeah, we were heading towards Saint David's.
Yeah, and we were going to be catching our ferry over to Ireland. And so
we
thought
we'd be hungry.
Yeah, so we thought we'd do some exploring along the way. And we found this cute little cafe called the Lavender Cafe in an old Welsh building.
Totally quirky.
Yeah.
It was so interesting. It was like art gallery slash cafe.
Yeah, tea house.
And the guy that was the artist there was Cuban. So he was a Cuban artist living in Wales.
And there were posters all outside that was like a band or concert.
No, he's a musician.
Whatever day.
This guy's like super multi-talented artist. And so he had all his paintings in there, filling the place up. And it was just so funny because they didn't even have a place to sit. And so he had to go gather up tables and chairs and like put them right in the center of the gallery
room.
Outside,
and they were all wet.
Yep. Just for us to be in. And meanwhile, he sat and like played crazy jazz piano for us. And then he started dancing, and then he asked Rachel to dance with him. And they, like, danced around a little bit. It was really silly.
He said I was the best dancer.
It was so funny. And he was, that guy was pretty hard to understand, but he was great. He was talking a lot about...
Right, because he had a Cuban accent. He had a Cuban accent, and then he was doing a Welsh English, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, super hard to understand.
But he was kind of talking, he was talking a lot about the inequality of wealth and the corruption in the art world. How the famous artists get really wealthy, and then they forget about the small man, and they just kind of, like, buy their way into galleries.
Yeah, and he got a picture with some...
He had a picture with some of the most famous artists ever, like hanging out with Damien Hirst and some stuff like that. So it was a wild experience. He was a cool guy,
fun experience.
And eventually we found, you know, our next campsite because we were going up to the Pembrokeshire area.
Which is a beautiful part of Wales. Wow. You know, we had a site that was overlooking the water with this gorgeous cliff and...
And, you know, we had planned actually on maybe doing some hiking or going and really exploring, but the weather got so socked in. Mm-hmm. It was like a storm moved in. We were inside of a cloud. There was such a low visibility. You couldn't even see more than like 50 feet.
And yeah. Like, it felt like it was like wintertime fog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was all like cold and we didn't have like raincoats or anything. So it was just.
Yeah. And it was great to be at this site. You know, they had a game room. So we played and.
We kind of hunkered in for the night. It was a great place to be. And then the very next morning, we got up nice and early, and we headed into Fishguard.
Well, something else that was cool is that we got to experience our first Welsh cakes. You know, we'd been seeing this on menus and around, and we're like, Welsh cakes, what the heck are those? Well, it turns out it's these tiny little circular...
English muffin cakes.
Well, they're like a pancake. So it's like two pancakes that are almost like a cookie.
Some have raisins, and then
the traditional ones have raisins, yeah.
And
but
then
they've started making them with like a jelly or jam inside. So it's like two pancakes squished together with jam or jelly.
They're like those mini pancakes that you get at the store.
So it's like an Oreo cookie of pancakes.
Right, but the ladies that sold them to us, they were so cute. They were like, "Well, you have to get the original." Right, right.
So it was pretty crazy. The boats are huge, massive, and they did this crazy thing. They issued us on in our RV all the way up to the front of one area where then they closed
the
giant seawall gates on the very bottom. So we're in with all the big semi trucks.
We're like deep in the hull of this boat, but the front part of the hull opens up to be able to let people on and off. And then they close these doors in between. There's like these partitions, big steel
like
barricades. Yeah, bulkheads. So
like
that if water came in, then it couldn't get to this level and it couldn't get to this level.
Or in the very front of it, so water would get there.
Right. So we got closed into these bulkheads and there was no way for us to get out.
And we had a little family dynamic tension going on from being cooped up so much. And so we spent a few minutes, we spent maybe 10 minutes once we parked. And meanwhile, nobody told us like what to do, what the instructions were. So we just like drove on. We stayed in our RV for like 10 minutes or so, working, you know, everybody talking and making amends and hugging and doing
our
thing.
Yeah, finishing up our breakfast. The kids were getting dressed. And yeah, we were sorting through our family drama. And
then
some
like,
people got a little upset.
Some people got a little upset, Rachel. And then
not saying any names, Rachel.
I'm not saying any names at all.
So, yeah, we were working our stuff out and getting all prepared to go. Meanwhile, we didn't even know these bulkheads were closing all around us.
And so when we get out of the RV, we're like, whoa, we're like shut in a giant steel box in the hull of the ship.
And
there's no humans in sight.
Liberty and I get out, and out of this little tiny door that came from nowhere, this, like, leprechaun-looking guy gets out, and he's like, what did he say, Lib? He's like,
well, we asked him, we were like, how do we get out? And he's like,
How'd you get down here? How'd you get in?
And meanwhile,
we're like, we were in the RV. Is it just the two of you? No, there's four. Oh.
And he just kind of like shakes his head.
And then he shakes his head, he turns, and he starts walking away, like half sort of motioning for us to follow him. And so we're like,
and meanwhile, Dad and I are, I'm waiting for Dad, and he's getting his shoes on. And then when we come out, you're like,
looking.
There's a leprechaun leading
us. We gotta go. We gotta go.
And so then he like takes us through this one door, this big huge steel door, through another door.
To push a button.
And then he had to like push this other button
and
to
like go pull through, big levers
and go through the red door that says "Do not touch, do not enter." There's like the big red kind of siren that could go off. So he makes us go through this door, and we're like, "What in the heck?
How are we gonna get back down here?" And then he's like, "Don't come down here until the boat stopped."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, this elevator we have to go on that, like, he did, like, this air seal to it, so it's like, brr.
So we sort of got scolded, and, oh, it was so funny.
Yeah. And then on our way back, getting back into this place
we couldn't get down to that spot because it was all barricaded off.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
Weird.
We, like, couldn't find where it was, and we kept having, and again, somebody had to, like, do a special door passage to like let us through,
right? Because we were a large vehicle, and so all the regular cars that people drive are up on like floors 2, 3, and 4, and so we're down in level 1 with like the giant semi trucks.
And meanwhile, when we even said where we were going, people were like, "No, you shouldn't be there." And we're like, "But that's where they put us. They told us to go there." They're like, "Oh no, well no, they shouldn't have."
Yeah. So
it was wild. It was one of my favorite apps, a game on the iPhone, is Forgotten Shores.
Monument Valley.
One of my favorite games is Monument Valley. I love the art direction. It's these cool brain twister puzzles. There's a little free plug for you, Monument Valley. But I felt like I was on Monument Valley. Like, we had to pull these levers and go through these strange corridors, and then things weren't where they seemed they should be.
Around.
You had to spin it around in your brain. That's what it felt like to me.
And Rachel left her purse in the chair.
And the fairy... The people that work on the ferry found it for me, and...
Yep. And already we could sense a little bit of a shift on the boat, because the accents of people were changing, and we could tell they were Irish. We would, like, talk to them and be like, "Oh, that person's Irish. It's different."
It's like Welsh feels like a mix between English and Irish. And then Irish is very definitively Irish.
And we had some breakfast on there.
Yes. So... there we are. We're now in Ireland, getting ready to continue our adventure. I hope you've really enjoyed this experience in Wales.
And we got some stamps for our passport.
We got our passport stamped, which was a special thing we had to request, because no one else was getting the passport stamped, but we asked for it. And so they had us pull aside and wait for a little bit, and then we came back with stamped passports into Ireland.
Yeah. Gosh, so excited to explore Ireland. We have a lot of things on our list. This is a rather large country, so... we're going to have to really make great use of our time. And, I think we really meandered through Wales. And so, looking at the rest of our itinerary and, you know, these larger countries that we need to cover, we're going to really have to hustle.
And so far, Daddy's doing really good with the RV driving around.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
It's a big task.
I've left, you know, now that I've blown the mirror out, I feel pretty solid, and our mirror repair worked pretty good. It's holding up, and I'm feeling good. We now know efficiently when to pull the mirror in and when not. And so whoever's in the passenger seat, sometimes it's Liberty, sometimes it's Merritt, sometimes it's Rachel. Whoever's over there sometimes has the job of, all right, pull the mirror in, we're going down a narrow road, or, you know.
You literally have to hang out the window to do it.
Oh, and use a lot of core strength, too.
Oh, because it's pretty far away.
It's far away, and it's kind of hard to maneuver.
Yeah. So, it's fun. We're working out the kinks, and,
yeah, everybody's got their jobs, too. It's like when we're backing up, Merritt, there's like a...
window by my bed.
Yeah, her bed has a window at the very back of the bus. And so she's able to see and stick her hand out. And then from the backup camera that we have at the front...
I can see her head or arm waving out the back.
Yeah, and so she'll... We know we have about 4 or so feet of clearance, but she has a better perspective. And so she'll be able to give the thumbs up or the stop motion. It's pretty cute.
Pretty great. So...
something else that I love that Merritt tends to while we're traveling is that the refrigerator works... only either on propane or electric when we're stopped. Oh, wait, how does it work?
So it's a 3-mode fridge. So it works when you're plugged in at a campsite, when you have your facilities and your services, or you can burn propane.
Which you can't do while you're driving.
So you could do that when you're camping off the plug.
But,
or it also runs on battery power while your engine is running.
And so Merritt has taken it upon herself to, every time we are in motion, she presses the refrigerator on.
At the right button, and she sets it to auto, so it senses that we're running and it can run on battery and keeps our food cold.
Yeah, it's really great. It's just something that I have not even tended to or has been on my radar, but I noticed that she does it, and it's, like, awesome. We've all got our jobs and keep this thing running smoothly.
Yeah. So, here we go. Checking into Ireland, and continue to follow the adventures. More to come.
Much love.
Bye!
That's naughty. We can't do that. That's naughty. We can't do that. That's naughty. That's naughty.